as tomorrow is the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada, and as many of us may not be able to attend if we've got jobs and so on, I thought I'd just speak a little bit in preparation for that. And I've chosen a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're reading today from Canto 4, Chapter 28, text number 50. Translation. She then prepared a blazing fire with firewood and placed the dead body of her husband upon it. When this was finished, she lamented severely and prepared herself to perish in the fire with her husband. This is the wife of King Malayadwaj, I think, who was previously Paranjan in a previous life. I'm kind of wondering why I chose this verse now. I can see a few quizzical faces. I'm wondering, did I make a mistake? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is a long-standing tradition of the Vedic system that a faithful wife dies along with her husband. This is called Sahamarana. In India, this system was prevalent even to the date of the British occupation. Notice the word occupation, yes. At that time, however, a wife who did not wish to die with her husband was sometimes forced to do so by her relatives. Formerly, that was not the case. The wife used to enter the fire voluntarily. The British government stopped this practice, considering it inhuman. However, from the early history of India, we find that when Maharaj Pandu died, he was survived by two wives, Madri and Kunti. The question was whether both should die or one should die. After the death of Maharaj Pandu, his wife settled that one should remain and the other should go. Madri would perish with her husband in the fire, and Kunti would remain to take charge of the five Pandava children. Even as late as 1936, we saw a devoted wife voluntarily enter the fire of her husband. Srila Prabhupada is using the royal we, meaning that he saw it. This indicates that a devotee's wife must be prepared to act in such a way. Similarly, a devoted disciple of the spiritual master would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciple to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and to execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciple should decide to die along with the spiritual master. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. Chitim daru mayam chitva tasyam patyu kalevaram adipya charumarane vilapanti manodade. She then prepared a blazing fire with firewood and placed the dead body of her husband upon it. When this was finished, she lamented severely and prepared herself to perish in the fire with her husband. Amagyana Timaranda Sajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militanyena Tasmai Shi Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpa Turubis Cha Kripa Sindhu Vacha Piditanam Pavanebio Vaishnavebio Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I do not intend to discuss the issue of sati at length. It is a controversial issue. Sometimes issues are complex in Krishna consciousness, moral issues particularly. They're not always easy. However, there is a simple way to make moral decisions, or a relatively simple way. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on the Gita, and particularly on the verse in the Gita, Vyavisyatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. Vyavisyatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. Ekeha Kurunandana. Next line. Bahushaka Yanantishta. Yes. He explains that actually those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. To be resolute is important. Someone mentioned to me, I was visiting my mother yesterday. She mentioned to me, yes, he who hesitates is lost. It's a common saying. So to be resolute, that means how to make a decision, to be able to make a clear decision without hesitating, is the sign of a pure soul. And he has one purpose, ekeha. Otherwise, if not, bahushaka. It is many branched. Yeah, Bahu means many, Shakar, branches. Many branches. The intelligence is all over the place, full of contradiction. It's hard to make decisions. We have experience. But if we're a devotee, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in this verse that the devotee is resolute because he makes decisions based on one thing. Will this please my spiritual master? That is, of course, one should be very, even then, it is not always easy to decide what will please my spiritual master, but that is the focus. What I'd like to do here today is actually to look at this verse and purport, somehow connect it to Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, of course. This is relevant here, because when the spiritual master is present, we have his vapu. We can serve his body. But when he leaves, we have to serve his vani. And it's that at that point, we have to take shelter, this chapter explains, of the supersoul who's dwelling within, to try to understand what the spiritual master wants. That's the chaitya guru, Krishna within. We have to actually take shelter of the Lord within to find out what the spiritual master wants. I thought I'd actually explore this a little bit in terms of something that's kind of alluded to here, and that is the process, that is love. And not only, of course, the whole process of bhakti is based on love or loving devotion. But I'd like to particularly explore how we practice that in this world. What does it mean for us as devotees? What does it mean for us in executing the order of the spiritual master within the society that he has created particularly? We have to be very careful to understand the order of the spiritual master. It is easy in any tradition, and that also happens in ISKCON, to misinterpret Shastra and truth. It is easy. On many issues, we may quote Srila Prabhupada. What are they called, those? I think they're called Prabhupada Saids. Yes, Prabhupada Saids. We call them Prabhupada Saids. Sometimes we draw. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula. Sometimes we draw from spiritual truth to justify our own sense enjoyment or whatever. So actually, I'm going to quote a Prabhupada said. And this is Srila Prabhupada speaking to, it's a letter to Krishna Das, written from Vrindavan on the 7th of November, 1972. Just like in our ISKCON, there are so many false things. Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. This is Prabhupada speaking. We have to expect that actually it is easy for teachings to become yoga nashtaha, it's called in the Gita. That connection is lost. The message is lost. Something is not understood. And I'd like to really emphasize the importance of love and affection even while we're living in this world. It has occurred to me that somehow or other we have to start to exercise these loving exchanges before we go back to Godhead. Otherwise, what on earth are we going to do when we get back there? It must be done now. It is not, back to Godhead is not a geographical change. In one sense it is, and we're going to look at it like that. But more importantly, it's actually a change of consciousness. Therefore, this reciprocation with the Supreme Lord has to be established and perfected in this world. And how do we do that? And is it just in connection with Krishna? There are some important questions. Here is a wife serving her husband. It's a contentious issue. But those who support this practice, and Srila Prabhupada says it shouldn't be mandatory or compulsory, suggest that it was based on love. I mean, that's quite a lofty ideal, that actually you would rather die than lose the one you love. But even now, that happens. Very often couples, when one dies, the other often goes very soon afterwards. I think there was a news article a little while ago saying that one couple had passed away within 4 hours of each other or something. One died and then the other. So there are different opinions on this, but I like to actually just look at this idea of love as a value, how we practice, and what does it mean to us as members of ISKCON? What does it mean in pushing forward ISKCON? What is the significance? Certainly we know, Prema Pamato Mahan, that to achieve love of God is the highest goal. I'm going to explore a little bit the idea of love as a virtue. And there's one writer, a French writer, I believe. Do we have anyone from France? Yes, Prabhu, you're from France. His name was André Comte Sponville. He's actually not a theist, but he's written what I find a very interesting book, A Short Treatise on the Great Virtues. I'll come back to what he says in a minute, because we also have our literature on virtues. What is the importance of virtue in Krishna consciousness? What is the importance of morality in Krishna consciousness? Are these important? Our own Satsarup Goswami has written a book on the 28 qualities of a pure bhakta, a devotee. Now, someone may quote the verse, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana sarvargunas tetra samasate sura harava bhaktasyukato mahadguna Manorate in asati, davato bihi. We're probably familiar, much quoted verse. One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all good qualities. Sorry, has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications which are of little value. This is because he is hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. I'd like to ask and possibly answer a couple of questions here. To what extent or in what way, if at all, should we condemn material values or material virtues? It's often done that we sometimes have a tendency to criticize the virtues of those who are materialists. They're not real. However, I'm going to make a suggestion here that the reason they're of, Srila Prabhupada calls, little value is not because they're false in the Mayavadi sense, that they don't exist, but they're true in the Vaishnav sense, that they're real but temporary. Those of us who know the philosophy will know that. It's not that this world is false. It exists. Yeah? There are some philosophers who actually say everything is false. There was one philosopher, I forget who it was, but he was walking along discussing this, and he said, I defy them thus, and he kicked a brick. To kind of say, you know, it's here. The brick is temporary. My toe is temporary. You may have lost. This is the Vaishnava philosophy. This material world is real in the sense that it exists. It is unreal in the sense that it is temporary. And actually, we're agreeing with some other philosophers here. Yes. It's real. I'm thinking of Immanuel Kant. He said that actually virtue, all the virtues, the good qualities, they are actually, their foundation is in the spiritual realm. That's where they're found, these virtues. They're ultimately spiritual. But, of course, the morality is enacted very much in this world. I'm going to suggest we should be very careful about criticizing others. After all, we want to perhaps explore what is Srila Prabhupada's contribution. What is the distinctive or unique contribution of Srila Prabhupada? And we'll come to that. Srila Prabhupada certainly criticized other philosophies, particularly we know the Nirvishesha and Shunyavad. But we should also be a little careful about criticizing. I want to come to that because we're discussing the idea of love, and I'd like to discuss how that applies to ourselves, how that applies to devotees, and how that applies to the non-devotees as well. The other, I think, misapprehension or misunderstanding is that the idea that we shouldn't really think about these things, that somehow, automatically, by practicing Krishna consciousness, all these qualities will come. And I think we need to be very careful about what is meant when Srila Prabhupada says, automatically, if he uses that word. Generally, automatum refers to a machine. Interestingly. But there is a, generally speaking, and we are not machines. Although we have a body, yantra rudani maya, but actually we have agency, we're not a machine. I asked this question because I felt uneasy with the idea that actually we simply chant Hare Krishna and we do not think about, are we developing virtue? Or vice. And Radhanath Swami, this was in Radhadesh, he said, well, why have we got so many stories in our shastras? about kings and Brahmins and merchants and others who are acting in a particular way that develops vice or virtue. Why are there so many stories there about that? I mean, if you consider the Mahabharata, for example, it really discusses, of course there are different levels of understanding, but one of the main themes is, well, there's a phrase used, Dharma is subtle. Some of you may have seen one of the versions of the Mahabharata when Bhishma is sitting on the throne, or one of the thrones. There was Dhritarashtra was there, but on his seat. And he was in a dilemma. After all, he'd taken a vow to support, not only to remain celibate, and by taking this vow, he got this name, Bhishma, terrible vow. But he'd also taken the vow that I will always support the throne of Hastinapur. And by the way, when the Kshatriyas take a vow, they mean it. Yeah? And that's why Krishna tells Arjuna, declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. It had some meaning because Krishna was acting as a Kshatriya. Yeah. So he took this vow, and yet Draupadi was being disrobed. And one of the five sections of society that has to be protected is the women. Srila Prabhupada mentions this. You can actually tell whether a society, or one test of the morality of a society, is how, and we could look at ISKCON also, is how much it protects these five sections of society. How much does it protect the women, the children, the animals, particularly the cows, the old people, and the Brahmins? How much does it support them and protect them? So, I mean, I'd like you at some stage, I'm not going to discuss it in depth now, but if you'd like to study this, there's a wonderful part in the Bhagavatam where Arjuna returns from Dwarka. And he's looking downcast. Yudhisthira greets him, but he asks him, why are you looking so downcast? He did not ask him, what's the problem? You're not feeling so well? He actually, if you look at, read the questions he asked him, and it's very interesting. It gives an idea of the Kshatriya spirit. Kshatriya, they protect materially. Very important. He asked him, have you been defeated in battle by one who's superior to you? Have you been unable to protect those who deserve your protection? Have you taken your meals alone without ensuring that others are fed? A very interesting meditation as to how the Kshatriya class show their love and affection for others. So Draupadi was being disrobed, but he'd taken a vow. And in this film, you can actually see him with one hand, he's pulling the sword, and it's coming out of the scabbard a little. And then with the other, he's grasping the blade, and blood is oozing down his wrist. Dilemma. Yeah. Very powerful imagery of a dilemma. Where was I going?
Yeah.
Yes, there's conflict. Yes, it's about those conflicts. It's not always easy. Even there's a story of how Ashwatthama was caught, and Arjuna didn't know what to do, how to punish him. Krishnena Parikshita, it's mentioned. Krishna was examining Arjuna there. So actually, it's not always easy to make some of these decisions. So therefore, actually, we need to discuss vice and virtue and what it means. It is part of our engagement. We're not just interested in doctrinal clarity. We are interested in that, and that's what we're discussing now. But actually, the Bhagavad Gita, even though it's essentially a primary text, was actually a response to a moral dilemma. Morality is important for us. Virtues are important to it. But Mr. Comte Sponville, whom I mentioned, he is actually, in his book, he goes through many of the virtues, including starting with etiquette, and we could say, well, what about Vaishnava etiquette? And he actually concludes that love is the crowning glory of all virtues. He writes that even we are aware of love when it's absent. And he writes that the other virtues become conspicuous only in the absence of love. And, I quote, they cannot fill the void that illuminates them. The very thing that makes them necessary makes it impossible to believe that these other virtues might suffice. Love commits us to morality and frees us from it. There's a notion of transcendence there, in a way. Now, there are some interesting discussions about the importance of love. I've heard, but it seems to be a little bit of an urban myth, that babies die if they're given all material facilities but not love. And I heard there'd been some experiments, but I was wondering who would conduct such experiments. And some of the writing I read, it referred to Romania and Russia, but places like that. And I'm not sure whether it's true. But actually, there is evidence also in our own Shastra on the importance of love. Hmm? In fact, even in the Bhagavad Gita, right in the first chapter, there is, Arjuna mentions Varna Sankara, unwanted children. And there are many quotes on Varna Sankara where Srila, I won't go through them all, but he actually mentions how when there are many Varna Sankara, society goes wrong. When there's unwanted children, what does this really mean? It means, Srila Prabhupada talks about the Garbhadan Sanskara and so on, but what it really means is the children are not wanted and they're not loved. And that means they grow up with a perception that I'm not really wanted, that I'm not loved. Therefore, this love, this affection, is important in life. It is a basic need for all of us. I'm going to read a poem by one British poet and translator, F.W. Burdillon. He apparently went to Oxford. The night has 1,000 eyes, and the day but one. And yet the light of the bright world dies with the dying sun. The mind has 1,000 eyes, and the heart but one. Yet the light of a whole life dies when love is done. It is so much a part of life that we cannot really deny it. There is also a interesting passage in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11. I'll read this. I'll read just the purport, I think. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this analogy as follows. Bhakti or devotion may be compared to tushti, satisfaction, because they both take the form of pleasure. Pareshanubhava, or experience of the Supreme Lord, and pushti, nourishment, are analogous because both sustain one's life. There's also a Vaishnav tradition called Pushti Marg, the Pushti Marg, Balaba tradition. So that it's the path of nourishment. It is that love which sustains us. And of course, the meaning of dharma is that which sustains. What actually sustains us? What gives us life? Now, what I want to do here is look a little bit at the idea of the role of love in our own lives quickly. I'm going to leave time for questions and answers. There is quite a debate about what it means in terms of what's the relationship between self-esteem and humility. What does humility really mean? It's such an important quality or virtue within our Vaishnav tradition. What does it mean? Now, interestingly, if we look at videos of Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't a shrinking violet. He was a very bold person. So I want to look at that a little bit. I came across an interesting quote by Chanakya Pandit that explains that we actually have not only relationships with other people, but we have relationships with ourselves. I hope we're not always talking to ourselves, but we do have an inner dialogue. There is an inner dialogue that goes on, actually. And that the nature of that inner dialogue may have significant influence on our lives. Na kaschit kaschichin mitram, na kaschit kaschichit ripu. Vyavahareina jayante mitrani ripavastita. Nobody is anyone's friend. Nobody is anyone's enemy. It is only the behavior by which one can understand who is his friend and who is his enemy. By our mutual behavior, someone is my friend and someone is my enemy. Similarly, as we have this dealing in the ordinary daily affairs, similarly, I have dealings with myself. And interesting, on a lecture, Srila Prabhupada, and this is in relationship to Narada Muni, there is one phrase which is interesting, and it's called Atma Ruchi, which means love of the self. Atma Ruchi. The translation in the Bhagavatam, and this is Narada Muni, at that time the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to me. That's how it's translated. But on one lecture, Srila Prabhupada explains, this Atma Ruchi means attraction for the self or soul. There are Atma. Atma means sometimes this body, Yasyatma buddhi kunape trudatuke. Gross materialists think that I am this body. That is also Atma Ruchi. They are busy to maintain this body, to decorate this body, to feed this body, to satisfy the senses of the body. This is also Atma Ruchi, because the body is also called Atma. So this is another Atma Ruchi materialist. Then Atma means mind, also mental speculation, very much busy in mental speculation. That is also Atma Ruchi. And the topmost Atma Ruchi, topmost means that the real Atma Ruchi is to be attracted by the self or the super self. That is Atma Ruchi. So it's interesting. There's also an interesting verse that says that the self, the soul, becomes situated in his own glory. That's our natural position. It is glorious. Of course, we can look at the role of remorse in this world for our sinful, if you like, or non-Krishna conscious activities. That can be there. That is important in spiritual life. But the self becomes, in Krishna consciousness, situated in his true glory. So we'd be very careful about actually considering self-deprecation to be a sign of humility, that we're always putting ourselves down. I think it was goodness gracious, we're having a theme here, French philosophers. Sartre, I think he was wisely said, one who finds himself lonely when he's alone is bad company. So we have to also be good company for ourselves. Huh? Yeah? How can we be good company for others if we're not good company for ourselves? Very important principle. And when we're Krishna conscious, we feel okay. Don't we? And the question remains of how we love in this world, because love has been differentiated from lust, and we know that. Love is like gold, lust is like iron. The question is then, what do we do with the affection we have in this world, with the attachment we have? And Srila Prabhupada makes it very, very clear that we cannot give up the finer sentiments of life. We cannot give those up. Sometimes when we join Krishna consciousness, we abandon totally our cultural capital and our moral capital. I would say our moral capital. We try and cut. We think that negating our personhood in this world will somehow bring us to spiritual life. But does it work? And what about, some of the things we bring with us? After all, the human society has every human society has a reflection of God consciousness. It's there. And of course, there are big debates within ISKCON about how much we're identified with the Hindu tradition, how we should relate to our own culture, our own country. There are big debates there, and important debates, I think. I'm not going to get into them too much. But actually, the whole idea of the four ashrams is that actually we expand our affection. It is not that the sannyasi has become cold-hearted. No. The sannyasi is, in modern terms, a global citizen. He's expanded his affection to embrace everyone. And by the way, I had a conception that affection in family life must be narrow. It must be somehow, partial or biased. But one writer from Oxford again, C.S. Lewis, he wrote very interestingly for me that actually God can love everyone because he's infinite. We're finite, and therefore our love is limited to our family or our country or whatever. And I thought that's interesting. And is that love, if we have a family, is that love wrong or is it right? And actually, I just read an article, an academic article, which pointed out that in the early days in ISKCON, some members thought that preaching was more important than giving affection to our children. Although Srila Prabhupada did say that for you, your child is your deity. So it raises the question, you know, what is the right approach to affection? And certainly giving it up does not work. Srila Prabhupada also writes, if you try to become detached, you will go mad. Pretty strong. We can't do that. Affection, love is a function of the soul. It's not a function of the body of matter. So this is really something for us to meditate on. Regrettably, I haven't got through very much of this. But I would just like to say that we need to be very, very careful about this path of negating the self. Not only the idea of God being an impersonal supreme, but negating the self and negating this world. Letter to Gopal Krishna by Srila Prabhupada on June the 5th, 1969. I know in India there are many foolish persons who think that by reading Bhagavad Gita, one is apt to renounce this world. This is completely foolishness. Arjuna was a family man, a soldier, and he was directly taught the principles of Bhagavad Gita, but he never renounced the world nor the battlefield. I do not know why there are certain crazy men who think that if a man becomes a devotee, he will have no more interest in worldly affairs. So if you think we're not interested, read this quote again. We are not Mayavadi. We do not state that the world is false. We say that if Krishna is truth, the world is also truth, because the world is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. So if Krishna is true, how can his energy be false? Srila Prabhupada, very clearly, we are interested in this world. We should not lose interest in this world. That is, we have a mission, coming back to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Then we have that mission to spread Krishna consciousness. And therefore we can't be uninterested in this world. Some devotees tell me life is suffering. Life is not suffering. Embodied life is suffering. Life is good. If you read the story, I don't have the quote with me, but when Vidura returned to the palace after being on... Everyone was overjoyed because Vidura was very dear to the residents of the palace. And it said that it was as if life had returned. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that when we are asleep, there is no consciousness, there's no activity. But as soon as we wake up, we become conscious and activity begins and we become joyful. We're conscious. That's happiness. So we cannot give up happiness. We cannot give up affection. There's much I haven't read, although I think it's very important to actually consider that we can't negate this world. We can't what does it mean, this Mayavadi philosophy? We should be very careful about thinking it's just a concept of God. It's so easy for us to actually, in the early stages, Srila Prabhupada says, to actually tend towards that jnana platform. But actually love has nothing to do with either karma or jnana. Accepting this world or renouncing, nothing to do with that. And I'm going to suggest, just to finish off, and this came actually from a meeting with Radhana Swami in Radhadesh, where Hriday Chaitanya, the temple president, asked him, could you give us some advice for our community? And Radhana Swami said, yeah, I've got three points here. For our own devotees, look after them. Devotee care. For non-devotees, make your message relevant. Are you reaching them? Is it really relevant to their lives and their needs? And I'd like to consider this. Are we relevant? Or should we consider, just calmness, it can't be relevant to them because they're not interested in devotional service. Are they not? They are interested. Their needs are the same as ours. They want that love. Underlying even those who are searching in the wrong place is that desire to have that relationship with Krishna, actually. That's all. Same motive, actually. Thirdly, we must nurture and retain our own children. We must do. They're our own. We have to. We have a commitment to them. Even if they don't like Krishna consciousness very much. Although Srila Prabhupada has written, I can't read it all, but he suggests that if our children are not Krishna conscious, it's not their fault, it's our fault. So if people aren't becoming Krishna conscious, whose fault is it? Where do we appropriate the responsibility? And what should be the correct responsibility? I'll leave you to meditate on that, but I'll read one final verse just to finish off. If I can find it. Yes. This is from the third canto. 25th chapter, verse 20 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prasangam ajaram pasham atmanak kavayo vidu sa eva sadusho krito mokshatwaram apavritam. Every learned man knows very well that attachment to the material, which means wife, family, and so on, is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens up the doors of liberation. Hare Krishna. This is Srila Prabhupada's mission. Yeah. He wants us to have such a loving society. Have you noticed that when you come in a family that's loving, you feel like being there? Or sometimes you go to a couple and they're kind of arguing. This really should be the mood. There is such a good atmosphere that we want to be there. Vishvambra. I finished.